You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Yes, I know. Once before, when Henrik Palmgren appeared on this show, we introed with that particular song. But I thought it was appropriate in light of the big headlines out of Sweden. That is, of course, boy, I'll tell you, in the mid-90s, when Henrik and I were in junior high school, that was one of the biggest songs out there, Sweden's own Ace of Base. And has Sweden seen the sign?
Is Sweden really based?
We'll find out. Closing things out this evening, Henrik Palmgren, our good friend, the founder and editor-in-chief of Red Ice TV. He was, of course, born in the land of the Goths, and he's returning tonight to break down the political situation in Sweden after reports suggest that its quote-unquote far-right party just made history. Henrik, welcome back.
Thank you, James. Keith, good to be back, guys. Always appreciate it. And thank you for that Ace of Base tune as well. That takes me that sure takes me back to like some
disco. Let me ask you just a sideline.
That's the good stuff.
Is ABBA Swedish or not? I've heard they're really Norwegian.
No, ABBA is Swedish. Of course they're Swedish. They're Swedish, our herring called ABBA.
Okay.
Ah, there you go. So we settled that. Yeah, Ace of Base, I got to tell you, that takes me back to those mid-teen years. That's some good stuff. I got to say, that's good stuff. I thought you'd like that. And appropriate under the circumstances. So, but I'll know this, Henrik, and I like the song. Hell, I'll admit it. But
I'll tell you this, James, real quick. The guy that wrote some of the songs, I forget his name now, but he was like caught voting for the Sweden Democrats at one point, and they kind of he became a little bit incognito. So at least one quarter of Ace of Base is based.
Well, I know a little bit about that. His name, I can't recall his last name. His first name was Ulf, ULF, and yes, he was basically tried in the media for being an outspoken neo-Nazi, is what they were calling him.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We know what that means. But yeah, I mean, no, he had some right-thinking tendencies, no doubt about it. So, and they're all brothers and sisters, I think, or at least some of them are. So I don't know, maybe more than a quarter of Ace of Base is based. But one thing I do know, Henrik, is normally when news sounds too good to be true,
it is.
And the news out of Sweden
is
very, very good. So what's really going on there with regard to the recent elections?
Yeah, I mean, it is actually good news, but is it as dramatic and as as far right as the media says? No, of course not. I wish it was. Right? You see,
yeah, me too.
Headlines, whether it's in the you see headlines, it's in the U.S. or something like that, like, oh, Trump is a national socialist. And it's like, I wish, maybe. But anyway, so it does look good, though. I do say that. Sweden Democrats got into the, we call it Riksdag, which is our, parliament, essentially. You have to have a 4%, you have to pass kind of a 4% threshold to become one of the parties that get to, be part of the parliamentary parties, essentially, those that form government, et cetera. And Sweden Democrats passed that 4% threshold back in 2010. Now, 12 years later, they are the second largest party in the country, which is historically speaking, but also from a point of view of a very kind of conformist Swedish populace. A rocket, an incredible rise to power, to be honest. And I think, we say this every time when we sit and wait another 4 years and like, oh, maybe next time, kind of thing. But the trends are certainly positive. It means that 1/5 of the country, and it's not nearly, you know, enough. But soon enough, it'll be, you know, they got 21% of the votes in this election. Soon enough, there'll be 25%, which is a quarter of the population voting for these. And it's not that the Sweden Democrats are going to fix everything. They're going to solve everything for us. But it shows us the path. It's a barometer of what people are willing to vote for in order to start tackling the problems. And so that's really positive. So what happened here, just to summarize it real quick, in the latest election, they became the second largest party. The Social Democrats are still bigger than them, unfortunately. Social Democrats got 31%. And it's essentially a bunch of old boomers. It's a bunch of old working class. You know, they've always voted this way, Swedes, and they're sitting there to this day. They don't know what's going on. They don't engage, and they still vote for the Social Democrats. But a lot of the young people are voting more right-wing. They're voting for parties like the Sweden Democrats. So now they're going to form government. So the right bloc, this is what the reason why the headline says, Sweden turned far right. It's because you're going to have a traditionally, you know, conservative party, so-called conservative. The name of the party is the Moderate Party, which basically means at best they're like center-left maybe. And in some regards, actually, the Moderate Party was even worse than the Social Democrats when it came to open borders and actually putting the putting us in this demographic nightmare that we're in right now in Sweden. But nonetheless, it is what it is. So this right bloc is going to go on to form a government, and that's not done yet. But the Sweden Democrats is the largest party of that bloc that now is going to form government. And those talks are still ongoing. Nothing is settled. We don't know who's going to be in what position yet. It could turn out to be a very problematic procedure. And you could even see a proposed, still to this day, I thought that they dropped that, but actually saw a headline today that the Social Democrats, again, not to be confused with the Sweden Democrats, the Social Democrats are the far left, you know, anti-Swedish party. But they are reaching out to the Moderate Party to basically do a kind of a containment strategy of proposing, let's not work with the Sweden Democrats at all. Let's just all the parties go together and just keep them out of power at any means. Now, I don't think that the Moderate Party is going to, you know, pick up on that. I don't think they're going to go that route, but those ideas are still kind of floating around a little bit. But I assume within probably a couple of weeks, it could be a longer process depending on how complicated it is, but we should be able to know who's in what position. And the head of the Sweden Democrats, Jimmy Åkesson, he very likely will be in some kind of role as a minister. I believe he's asked for that. And frankly, he should be in the prime minister's seat. But I guess the only way that the Moderates would work together with the Sweden Democrats was if the Moderate Party leader, he's so memorable, I don't even remember his name. It's a useless, pointless. But Leif, I think it is. Leif Johansson, I think it is. I'll find it here. But he's going to be the prime minister. But again, he's doing that as the third largest party. They got less votes than the Sweden Democrats, and they still are like looking like they're in the, you know, driver's seat, essentially, when it should be the Sweden Democrats. So anyway, but that's an overview, and that's very positive because it's a drastic change that have happened very quickly in the country. As I said before, Swedes are very habitual. They're very, you know, prone not to change easily and stuff like that. And the Sweden Democrats landing this high, if you will, on the latest general election is very good news.
Okay, well, that was a succinct and concise breakdown of what's going on in Sweden, if I've ever heard it. We'll continue on talking about it. I know Keith wants to jump in on the conversation. We'll talk a little bit about Russia, too, with the great Henrik Palmgren of Red Eye TV.
Hello, TPC family. It's James, and I've got to tell you that I sleep better at night knowing that there are organizations like the Conservative Citizens Foundation. The purpose of the Conservative Citizens Foundation is to promote the principles of limited government, individual liberty, equality before the law, property rights, law and order, judicial restraint, and states' rights, while at the same time exploring the dangers posed by liberalism to our national interests and cultural institutions. The Conservative Citizens Foundation also seeks to educate educate the public on the dangers of extremist ideologies like critical race theory and cultural Marxism. I've worked with the good people at the Conservative Citizens Foundation for many years, and their work comes with my complete endorsement. For more information and to keep up with all the latest conservative news headlines, please check out their website, AmericaFirst.com. That's MERICA1ST.com. AmericaFirst.com.
This is a battle between truth and deceit, a battle between forces that would enslave this country in darkness and between a media that wants to present you with the truth.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by six corporations. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in fact.
TheEpochTimes.com.
We at Freedom Factor have a passion for our shared American heritage and want to help restore some of that American pride by emphasizing the documents that made us Americans. Our goal is to put pocket constitutions into the hands of every American and in every school. This effort requires your help. Order your pocket constitutions and browse our website at freedomfactor.org to learn how you can help spread the message of freedom. Read it, know it, share it. FreedomFactor.org.
Always great, always fun to have Hendrik Palmgren on. And Hendrik is such a great guest to talk about just about any topic because he's a guy who has his one foot in each continent. And the mother continent, having been born in Sweden, news is taking place over there with elections. We can call him up. Anything happening in America, he's equally well-versed, and he shows it every time he and Lana take to Red Ice TV and their various programs there at that network. Keith, I know you had a quick comment.
Okay, first of all, I read an article in VDare that said that the game plan for the other parties that are part of the conservative coalition is to freeze out the Swedish Democrats from having any ministerial positions. Secondly, if as Sweden is a member of the EU, the European Union, and they are pro-immigration, is this going to be their excuse for not making any real reduction in the immigration into Sweden or not? What's your take on all that?
Yeah, I saw actually an article yesterday. The European Commission is apparently going to demand of the new government, once it is formed in Sweden, that they're going to drop any border controls going over to Denmark and other EU countries, which is just absurd. It's like, okay, well, I mean, not that it has been there and super enforced and very well or whatever, like to begin with, but it was like this. You're going to see a lot of things where they're, you know, this is what they do, right? They put out that fear message in the media, like we said before. Oh my God, Sweden is turning far right, and so at that moment, everything activates around us. Like, let's do everything once we can to contain them or prevent them from being able to do anything. And I suspect we'll see everything from the business world to, yeah, institutions like the EU beginning to, like, mobilize to try to prevent them from being able to do anything about the situation. So that's yet to be determined. But in regards to the first point you brought up about, like, not having them have any power and not any, you know, put any seats in the government, any ministerial posts that actually have some sway or that can, you know, make some change essentially, or at least prevent certain things. That could very well be true that they will be trying that, but if the Sweden Democrats, at least, which I hope are smart enough, they would just not agree to a deal like that, and that would push them harder. Because, see, again, the Sweden Democrats, I think, have a long-term strategy that they know that they're going to be gaining more and more and more. That's definitely the trajectory so far. I don't think, as bad as the situation is in Sweden, the Sweden Democrats, I don't think they feel a sense of panic that they just have to, like, it's all about being part of this government in 2022 and that's it. I think they have a lot of leverage here because they're going to be the biggest party in that right-wing bloc. And so I forgot to mention in the first segment there, the parties that are forming this is obviously then the Sweden Democrats, the largest one. Then it's the Moderate Party. I'll talk a little bit about them. Then it's the Liberal Party and the Christian Democrats. And the Liberal Party is, they're called that just essentially because of their like monetary policy. Now they've become what Americans think of when they hear the word liberal as well. But they weren't to begin with. It was just about like financial policy. They were like more liberal on that front. But anyway, so that's the bloc that's going to go together. And it could be true that there's still some shenanigans going on in the backdrop. And you will see, for example, the Social Democrats, as I said before, reaching out to the Moderate Party and basically say, hey, let us form a government instead and let's just do this like containment strategy and keep them out of positions of power. Again, I don't think that'll happen, but the Sweden Democrats have so much sway here that they could just basically say no to a deal. It would collapse and then the Moderate Party would have no power whatsoever. And I'm not sure if it would be a re-election at that point, if they can't, you know, agree to form a government or whatnot, but it's a little bit of a circus, I do admit that, and this could actually drag on for some time before we know, you know, what's what and who's who, essentially, and what positions they're going to be in. But it's going to be very interesting, and it's going to be very telling if the other parties have overcome this little, basically, barrier, right, of, like, will they work together with a nationalistic, more right-wing party? Or will they just not be able to do it? Because in the last election, there was no doubt. They all would have gone together just to freeze them out of position. But because of the popularity and the continued rise of the Sweden Democrats, they have influenced the other parties as well. And a lot of the rhetoric, at least, have changed. A lot of them are now saying that, well, we got it. We have to address, you know, the criminal gangs in Sweden, which is euphemism, of course, for all the migrant clans, essentially. They're running the show in some areas in Sweden now. And they're saying we have to do something about immigration. What it all comes down to at the end of the day is, of course, action. Will something actually be done, or is it just words and things that they throw out and say?
When all is said and done,
more be said than done. Yeah, Keith Alexanderism. Well, let me ask you this, Henrik. I mean, you go back and you go back to the history of Scandinavia, the history of Sweden, the Viking heritage. I mean, what could have captured the Faustian spirit of the West more than that conquering and exploring type people? And then for the longest time of all the cucked out countries of Europe, Sweden ranked at or near the very top. And that's a whole other conversation. But now it appears as though there may be another turn. You're talking about capturing.
Yeah. Now they've actually had some experience with
a fifth of the vote. What was the catalyst there for this turn back to the right, at least in part? Was it the demographic the changing demographics reaching a critical mass? And I'm guessing that that's what this party that we're talking about was running on, putting a curb to some of this immigration, or am I just guessing there?
No, of course, that's always been the number one issue. The only other thing that have kind of snuck its way into this last election cycle here is the issue of energy, right? Because we've now seen again, that will take us maybe to Russia later, but they're blaming the Russian Ukraine war on this, of course, and it's much more to it than that. But the energy question has been horrible in the country, as in so many other European countries as well. They're like decommissioning nuclear power plants. Nothing is really replacing it. They don't know where to go. They're saying we're going to do wind and solar, but of course, at least wintertime, there's not nearly enough of at least a solar, and there's nothing there. So prices are going up and up and up, and the few nuclear power plants that we have left is being overworked, and they're still talking about decommissioning some of them or last minute, like kind of salvaging them and try to start them up again. And the Sweden Democrats had a fairly decent policy on this, and they said, oh, well, look, we got to build more nuclear power plants, and people were attracted to that question as well. But the central issue have been, of course, immigration. That's just to put it in one word, it's about immigration. That's it. Then it's, you know, you can subdivide it and drill down into the tangents there later on. Well, if there's gang criminality, that's rape, it's issues with women pertaining to not being safe at nights and evenings in our country, all kinds of things. But all of that hinges on the one main stem of immigration. So that's the issue. And that's what the people are beginning to slowly but surely waking up to. And I'm not one of these who are like, well, it's over, it's lost. You know, I see that all the time when people talk about Sweden. I see it in chats and comments all the time. Oh, that's it. Nothing ever is going to happen. That it's over, it's lost. And it's like, no, you don't understand. Things take time. We're very obedient people. We're very, you know, we go by the book.
Compliant.
Yeah, of course, that's been exactly compliant, very, you know, very orderly and strict and all these things. And that's been one of our strengths for the longest time until, of course, we get a, you know, global homo system like we have now. And now that strength has been used against us, essentially, to have a kind of a conformity
right.
to the anti-Swedish attitudes in the country. But when
that's
that
exactly
shifts,
right.
when that changes, you could see dramatic changes towards nationalistic policies very, very quickly once it becomes a majority that are like considering that these new so-called, you know, far right leaning political opinions are the way to go. And that's how we're going to save our country. That could once again actually become our strength. So I'm far from saying, oh, it's over. That's it. You know, nothing's ever going to happen. It takes time. Swedes have a little bit of a different mentality. It's a different temperament. But eventually, once that, you know, when we can turn that ship around, you could see drastic changes very, very quickly. And that's what I'm hoping for.
What expert commentary on this situation in Sweden? We have really appreciated it, Henrik. And I want to remind people to go to redice.tv. Okay, so there's not a .com. Redice.tv. There you can catch all of the commentary and content produced by the Red Ice team, the couple, as it were, Henrik and Lana, two of our dear good friends. Henrik, now, we said we were only going to keep you for 30 minutes. I know you've got other things to do. Can you stay a couple of minutes into the next segment, or do you need to
Oh, fly? Sure. No, would love to.
I don't like to do that to people and ask them on the air when we say we're going to go for this long, and then they got something else they got to run to, and then they have to say no, because it puts them in an awkward position. But I did want to talk to you about Russia very quickly and
Ukraine.
Well, yeah, Russia, Ukraine, and what is being called an escalation there, and then we really will let you get back to your family. Two young Vikings there in the home, and of course, Lana.
A young Viking.
Yeah, that's right. So hang on. We'll be right back with Henrik Palmgren. Stay tuned.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Mortgage rates rose for the fifth consecutive week. The average rate on a 30-year fixed mortgage climbed to 6.29%, according to a survey of lenders released by Freddie Mac. It was the second week in a row that rates topped 6%. The last time rates were this high was October 2008, when the United States was in a deep recession. Hurricane Fiona remains a concern as it departs the Caribbean heading north in the Atlantic. Felipe Papin with the National Weather Service tells Fox News Bermuda and this weekend Canada are in the storm's path.
We're forecasting up to 2 to 4 inches of rain for Bermuda. And then for Nova Scotia, Prince Edward Island, and Western Newfoundland, we're expecting 3 to 6 inches of rainfall with local maximum of up to 10 inches. And so this rainfall could result in areas of flooding, some of which may be significant.
NASA is giving the thumbs up on a planned launch.
NASA's Artemis 1 rocket passed a critical fueling test Wednesday, potentially keeping it on track for a planned September 27th liftoff to lunar orbit in the unmanned mission.
Lance Pry reporting from the USA Radio News West Coast News Bureau. Former President Trump is weighing in on a lawsuit brought against him by New York AG Letitia James, who accuses him of overvaluing his assets in an interview on Fox News.
I actually thought that they would never bring a case, and she brought it. And the reason I thought, because she didn't have a case. I was of the impression she wanted to settle, but I had a problem because how do you pay something, even if it's a small amount of money, if you're not guilty?
Two Americans and five Brits who were captured by Russian forces in Ukraine have been freed in a prisoner swap. The prisoner exchange between Russia and Ukraine was brokered by Saudi Arabia. You're listening to USA Radio News.
This week on the Green Stock Journal, we're looking at public companies dedicated to environmentally friendly alternative energy sources. Blue Biofuels, trading under the symbol BIOF, has developed and patented a technology that can convert ordinary plant materials such as king grass, sugarcane bagasse, and farm waste into sugars that are used to create ethanol and sustainable aviation fuels. Blue Biofuels does this in a CO2 neutral and environmentally friendly manner. With the Ukraine war leading to grain shortages and record high corn prices, Blue Biofuels offers an alternative to corn-based ethanol by using plant-based waste. There are limitations in the amount of corn available for fuel, whereas there is sufficient plant-based feedstock suitable for the BIOF process to replace half the fossil fuels used in the U.S. Technologies like Blue Biofuels could be the answer that brings about a biofuels revolution, producing billions of gallons a year, making green energy production finally a reality. Do your research now on BIOF. For more on this story, visit greenstockjournal.com. This week on the Green Stock Journal.
Welcome back. A few more minutes with Henrik Palmgren, RedIce.tv. Folks, I can't emphasize enough the importance of supporting those who are out there on the front lines and at the tip of the spear. Content creators may be ubiquitous now, but then there are the best of the best. And Henrik and Lana truly are two of the best of the best, and I would appreciate you supporting them at RedIce.tv.
They have a paywall that's worth it.
Yeah, that's right. That's absolutely right. And a lot of free content as well. So I'll be sure to check it out. Now, Henrik, talking about, well, two questions. And I'll let you, you can take these in tandem and if you'd like. Sweden is not the only European nation that is having elections this fall. Is there anywhere else that you can point to throughout Europe and say, hey, we got a chance here to make some hay? I know there's several of the smaller European nations that are having some national elections. Anything that's popped up on your radar there that's as significant as what's happened in Sweden the last few days?
I was looking at Italy. They have, and actually, I haven't been keeping up with Brothers of Italy. Apparently, that's a party going back, but they're the number one over there now with 25%. The League, of course, which is Salvini, they've gone down a little bit. I'm not sure what the reasons for that are. He had some legal troubles, but they're still at 13%. And so, of course, they could still go together, I believe, and form. Also, kind of similarly, like the situation in Sweden, kind of a right-leaning bloc coalition parliament. So that's something I've been looking at. I'm not sure if some of the Baltic countries have it or not, but there are some good signs all over. This has happened over the last two, three election cycles or so that you see these parties kind of they pop up and you see, it's like you see the fish popping out of the server, you see the head of it, and then maybe it goes down under a little bit, but then it's trying again, and we can see this. We're trying different strategies, different methods, different combinations, different leadership and stuff like that. And this is not something that's going to just go away one day. This is the new political landscape in most Western countries now, that like we have nationalistic, patriotic oriented parties that are popping up and leaders. And that's something that's going to continue to be a massive trend for the following few election cycles. And in fact, I think that that's going to be at some point help to turn things partially at least around in some of these countries. So I'm very positive, actually. As dark as things are, much negativity there is out there, there's a lot of things that we have lost, of course, but a lot of things that we could redo at any point. As long as we don't lose our people of who we are, as long as we are still here, we are able to redo almost anything. We can rebuild. We can do things anew. We can form new coalitions and new pathways forward. As long as we are here as a people, there's nothing we can't do. So I'm very positive.
And now for a change of pace, what's the situation in Russia and Ukraine? We get a lot of fake news, I have the feeling, here in America. What is really going on there based on your research?
All right, and before you answer that, Henrik, and that's a great question, that's what I want to get into next, I just wanted to say, as a rejoinder to what you had mentioned, you are right. I think we lose sight of the fact, I think the time that we're on this earth skews the larger picture. You have to understand, there were European nations that were under Muslim occupation for 300 years before they could shake off the yokes of that.
Years.
Yeah, hundreds of years.
Yeah,
and that happened. So, I mean, we've been through bad times before. It's hard to see beyond just our own temporal existence and really remember the past actually happened, that the future isn't necessarily a continuation of things as they are now, and it doesn't have to be. And I agree with you. Absolutely. I think we are going to turn this whole thing around. Now, Keith, to your excellent question, Henrik, so Sweden is not that far removed from Russia. You got very skinny Finland there in the middle, and then you've got Russia. So I'm sure you're watching all of this with interest as well, and the cause and effect of Ukraine. I mean, that's all been well discussed over the course of the last year since February. But with regards to the escalation, or the so-called escalation, what do you think?
Yeah, it's a very interesting question. I've been watching it too. I'm trying to figure out what the reason was for the latest kind of, I guess, pushback of sorts by Ukraine. And of course, they're handed incredible, you know, weapons and resources and endless aid package from Western countries, from America, obviously, but also from other Western European countries, as our own countries are struggling with even heating our own homes now going into fall and winter. I guess just hand over the billions to Ukraine. And it's not that I wish Ukrainians bad by any means. I'm very pro-Ukrainian, as I'm pro-Russian in the sense of the people, the institutions, and those at the helm of power. That's a different thing, of course, that we can talk about. But there was a little bit of a pushback recently by Ukraine. And Russia seemed to kind of pull this line that, like, we're just regrouping. It's fine. Everything is fine. And then, of course, yesterday, Putin came out and said that they're doing what they call a partial mobilization. So it's not a draft, but it's the people already with military experience, their reserves and so forth. They're not going to be called in, which means, of course, that now, you know, we're going to see another, I assume, massive offensive, potentially to take back those areas that were lost. Maybe they're trying to go for Kyiv or something like that. I'm not sure what's going to happen. Anyone's guess, but I agree with you guys that you read Western stories, and I've done this for, you know, for a long time in terms of like what the developments are. And it feels like a lot of it is more about boosting morale in the West when you read a story, in order to justify the money, in order to justify the weaponry, in order to justify this kind of, frankly, in a weird way, the super patriotic kind of sentiments that we've seen in the West for Ukraine. It's like, as our leaders, is like dismantling our own countries and shutting down right-wing groups and nationalistic groups and attacking them, targeting them in our lands, in our homelands. In Ukraine, they're like, yes, Azov, here you go. And it's not that I'm anti-Azov. I'm just saying it's a remarkable situation where the establishment are like lining up with an actual, you know, nationalistic, national socialistic military group in a country to give them weapons, to train them and all these things as they're shooting us down in our homelands. It shows you as well, by the way, that how unscrupulous, if you will, our leaders are, and that it's not about ideology. It's not about right or left to a certain extent for them. It's not about a certain political way. It's for them, it's about using whatever mechanism and tool and ideology that they can to advance their interest and to gain more and more power. And for some reason, our leaders in the West, you know, have decided that Ukraine is not going to fall. We're going to use that as a proxy war against Russia in order to try to weakening them. I think it's it's horrible. Yeah, go ahead.
What I heard is that the West is willing to fight Russia to the last Slav, but not to the first Jew. And
well, I'll tell you, as much as the system cranks out propaganda, there ain't no propaganda like wartime propaganda.
No,
and
exactly.
Like every other issue, there's no diversity of opinion with regards to the mainstream coverage or the establishment coverage of this conflict, and you can pretty much see right through that. But yeah, of course, calling up the reserves. You know, this was interesting. There was an opinion piece, a couple of them that I read, talking about how evil Putin was for calling up his own reservists in this conflict. Well, how evil was America when they instituted a full-on draft to go to Vietnam, which was nobody's damn business here.
Yeah. Well, see, I also heard a report. I hope it's not true, but that they use the occasion of this war and the fact that the Ukrainians are so dependent on Western aid to pass a law legalizing homosexual marriage in Ukraine, which almost all of the Ukrainian people are opposed to. Did you hear that too?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I saw it. It was like Zelensky floats the idea of legalizing gay marriage. I saw that. It was like a couple of weeks ago. They're doing stuff like that. Again, that's to like bring them into the full, you know, the full swoop
global
of global
homo war.
Like, okay. Yep, exactly. We're like, you're gonna come with us. Come with us. Here's a gay pride event. You know what I mean? It's like, but here's the money. Here, bite the
bend over and touch
Nazis
your toes
in Russia. Oh my God! Yeah, it's crazy. I've never seen anything like it, to be honest. It's one thing that I do notice as well, though, is that how Ukraine and Russia, that the prior issues that we already had because of the pandemic, but there's even another, like the whole climate agenda weaved into that too, of shortages, supply chain issues, fertilizer shortages and stuff like that. These were already problems before the Russia-Ukraine war started, but now they can pin everything on that and say, well, see, it's Putin's fault. You know, whether it's from, you know, us not being able to heat our homes because of bad decision-making, obviously, by European leaders.
Climate change ideology has nothing to do with it, right?
Well, it doesn't, but they've hinged that on it. And I'm saying they're not able to advance.
What I'm saying is that that's really what it's all about. That's what all the shortages are about, plus...
Exactly.
Cutting off Nord Stream, absolutely. But they want to blame it on Russia.
Yeah, actually, and I should mention...
They have the perfect scapegoat. Yeah.
We're going to have Nick Griffin on next week to talk about... This is a whole other story. I think you could go an hour on this. What's going to happen with this energy crisis that Europe's about to face. Henrik, we've got seconds remaining. You want to take a stab at that? Is Western Europe going to freeze up this winter?
We're going to have regime change in Germany.
Yeah, it looks crazy. I tell you this much, though, that when the leaders of our countries begin to meddle with forces like this, I don't think they know what they're getting into. I'm not sure what's going on with that and why they're like fiddling with our food supply and our energy supply. But things can drastically change if they do that and if they don't do it right.
That's right. Yeah, I tell you what, you know, we've talked about people coming over to our way of thinking. But they need to suffer a little more. Hey, you have a starving belly and a freezing child, and then that's when the system can lose control and when our overseers can be overthrown. Hey, Henrik, I love you, buddy. RedIce.tv, Henrik and Lana. We'll talk to you again soon. Always a pleasure.
Good to see you, Henrik.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs. While you're waiting, drop by our Confederate Corner for a free cup of coffee and good conversation. Remember, there are no strangers here, just friends who haven't met yet. Dixie Republic, we're not just a roadside attraction, we're a destination for our people. For more information, visit DixieRepublic.com.
Have you ever had great honey? No, I mean really good, all-natural, raw honey. Well, now you can, thanks to localhoneyman.com. We can ship out our locally made honey all across the U.S. So don't worry, you won't miss out. Plus, Local Honeyman has so many different flavors, like Utah Wildflower, High Desert Delight, Happy Valley, and Blackberry, just to name a few. So purchase your delicious raw honey today at localhoneyman.com.
Do you treasure your liberty? Well, at LovingLiberty.net, we most certainly do. And we want to help protect your liberty, too. Become part of the family. Everyone knows that the core of any society is the family. Therefore, the government should foster and protect the integrity of its family, we the people. Won't you join us as a Loving Liberty sponsor to help us promote the principles in the 5,000-year leap? Let's restore the miracle that changed the world at LovingLiberty.net.
I got a sweet tea here in the studio, and the break ended right as I had a big old ice chip in my mouth. So let me take care of that, and we'll get back to work. Keith's actually still in the green room. He hadn't even come back yet. He's still at the refrigerator. We'll get him back here in a minute. But I'll tell you what, we're thirsty after all this work tonight, and what a great trio of guests this evening. That we presented to you. I think the key there was at the very end, we were able to just rush that in right at the end of the last segment. This idea that of course, our enemies are not infallible. Just because they do something doesn't mean it's always going to pan out. Now, they've had a pretty good track record of being able to manage the people, but that is, they've been able to do that in part because the people have been content. The people have been well fed. The people are warm in their beds at night. Now, even though our people have been relatively prosperous in a financial way, that doesn't mean that we don't see what's going on and that millions of people are not seeing and revolting in their hearts and minds with regards to what's going on. What's missing? A little bit of suffering. We have talked about this time and time and time again. And so that's the thing. And Henry, you heard Henrik say it there at the end. He said, this is it, meaning this is a point that needs to be further discussed. And that is, if Europe starts to freeze, that's when you can have revolutions. That's when you can have people be overthrown.
That's right. And, you know, if energy gets fossil fuels and whatnot get any more expensive in Europe, they're going to be burning their money. That's going to be the cheapest way to generate heat over there rather than spending it. It's just, you know, it's crazy. And it, believe me, you think it gets cold in America? I mean, around Dusseldorf and stuff like that, it really gets cold. And if you don't have heat, you know, there's going to be pipes bursting.
Well,
there's going to be,
this
you know,
is it,
a breakdown of the whole infrastructure.
And we're going to talk at length with Nick Griffin about this next week, our good friend and former member of European Parliament. I really like Nick. He is a very favorite of mine.
He's a real McCoy. He's
a
not
great
like Tommy
commentator.
Robinson or somebody like that over there. This
guy he's taken us to high elected office, and he's never backed down. But he's just a great guest and a great commentary and a great analyst. I put him up there with, you know, somebody like Mark Weber with his ability to break something down and be entertaining and informative while doing it. I mean, all of our guests are great. We never have a guest on that we're like, oh, well, you know, he'll be serviceable tonight, but, you know, probably not as good as we could have done. I mean, I think everybody we bring on is great in their own way, but I just, you know, some people you just have a connection with, and Nick's one of those guys. I mean, all the guys tonight for that matter, really all of them, but anyway, I like Nick especially. And you got to understand, I mean, even here, even in the United States around this time of year, out in the Mountain West, you're starting to get some snows. And I can tell you that it's probably already starting to get a little chilly. But come October in Europe, it's starting to get very cold. And then you get into winter and it gets colder still. So we're going to talk with Nick about this next week, about what this energy crisis, who's winning as a result of this energy crisis. And what effects it could have. So we'll do that. Now, I want to, well, let me ask you this real quick about Russia. Do you think that the likelihood of tactical nuclear weapons has increased in the last week, Keith?
I do. Let me tell you, I think that Russia is basically holding their cards right now, not making a play, because they're waiting to see what happens in the U.S. elections in November. And if the Republicans take over control of the House of Representatives and the Senate, there's a possibility that this, you know, unlimited source of refund of resources and money for Ukraine may come to an end. And that's what he's waiting for. That will have a big effect on his next move, I believe.
That's a good point. So that's another thing. So now you're less than 2 months away. Or excuse me, you're a little more than 2 months away. We've got, what month is this? No,
we're in September.
Wow,
we're in the end of September.
My God, the midterms are a little over a month away.
That's
a month
right.
And a week. So you're not very far from knowing, and it's true. We were talking about Representative Paul Gozer, out of Arizona, before the show started tonight, and he had the recent quote, which was
that Ukraine is not our ally and Russia is not our enemy. And I don't think that Vladimir Putin hadn't heard that or read it. And that is giving them hope that somehow this blank check that we've handed to Ukraine is going to come to an end. And if it does, that will put a whole different perspective on
the
conflict.
That's right. And you have hardliners like Marjorie Taylor Greene, who wants zero funding. I think J.D. Vance was another one who's made some pro-Russian comments, or at least he's anti sending out billions of dollars every month in foreign aid. You know, you could have built the wall around the Mexican border, both coast and Canada. You could have completely
right.
encircled it with a concrete wall for what you've sent Ukraine. There wasn't money to build the wall, but you could send Ukraine exponentially more. And for nothing, to prop up their Jewish puppet Zelensky. And so I think Putin, obviously, he sees that. We're a little more than a month away from an election. And if the Republicans win, you've absolutely reached peak support for Ukraine from the United States. And at best, it would be scaled back almost to nothing. So we'll just have to see.
I forgot who said it, but somebody said, if something can't go on forever, it won't. Well, endless resources for Ukraine can't go on forever. Even the only reason it's gone on this far is that we're the world's reserve currency, and this type of profligate spending is the type of thing that is going to hasten the day when the dollar is no longer the world's reserve currency.
But if America starts peeling back that funding, then it's gonna really have an
impact.
The
rest of the funding is a drop in the bucket compared to what America's putting in there.
All right. Now, we mentioned this. We're going to talk about all that and more next week. First hour, live from London, Nick Griffin. We'll be back with this. The future of the GOP, this is another Hunter Wallace piece, and he says he's feeling bullish. We were talking about this a little bit with Warren Balog. Regardless of what the politicians may stand for, can enough pressure be put on them where they do our bidding, whether they believe it or not? And I think a lot of that will happen. I think you'll certainly see that societally. Speaking in society, your average Joe, average guy or gal out there will just go along with whatever's winning. We've said that a million times. But look at all the stuff that Brad mentions, that just over the course of the past five or so years, all of the things which used to be taboo and which used to only be discussed in our circles are now entering mainstream conservative consciousness, and that is nationalism, populism, so-called journalists being the enemy of the people, Christian nationalism. I mean, there is a reality that exists where fundamentalists inherit the world because they're the ones reproducing. If we can just wait out this current age, and in the not-too-distant future, you could have a sort of theocracy, in a matter of speaking.
Well, Christian nationalism is a great stratagem. You talk about jujitsu. You know, they talk about sending people to Martha's Vineyard. And by the way, if you want jobs for migrants, what's better than a vineyard, right? But anyway, what is happening with Christian nationalism is that's a way to break off the race card. Blacks are Christians, so are Hispanics. They can't use those against us. Who is left out in the cold if we have Christians being ruled by Christians? It would be Muslims, Hindus, atheists, and Jews. And there's one of those groups in there that I think is really alarmed by the specter of Christian nationalism.
I wonder who.
Yeah. And you just, you know, that's where all the pushback is coming from. That's why they insist on calling it white Christian nationalism. And the real secret of it is that it's not white at all. It's Christian.
Well, it's predominantly white, but
well it will be.
I'll tell you what, black Christianity is a different ball game.
Well, I know it, but on the other hand,
that kind of stuff,
if you can break off blacks and Hispanics from the liberal coalition, basically that's going to leave the other group, maybe 10% of the population, they're going to be on an island. And fortunately for us, our main opposition is on that island.
Okay, other things that are going on in the GOP, not just its base, mind you, but state political parties and high-ranking elected officials. Secession is being entertained. Obviously, immigration restriction. Abolishing the FBI. Trade protectionism is back. Black-on-white crime, the great replacement. Anti-feminism. The term anti-white, we talk about Ron DeSantis. The term anti-white. Attacking the SPLC and the ADL, as we've seen Tucker Carlson do. And so, you know, again, this is Brad's point. 3 years ago, you had mainstream conservative hacks like Charlie Kirk basically calling people white supremacists for saying exactly what he himself is saying now, that whites are being replaced by non-white immigrants, and it's not a good thing. The Great Replacement is real. It's not a theory. It's a fact. So, and Brad's saying he's bullish. He thinks in a few years the Jewish question will be something that's openly debated by the Republican base. So, yeah, I feel pretty good, too, about the way things are going. Not a lot to show for it yet, but I think conditions are becoming more favorable for something to happen.
Things breaking bad. Well, things are breaking good for us now.
That's good. Well, folks, listen, with about 2 minutes remaining, this will be my last chance to talk to you before the end of our third quarter fundraising drive. We are a little bit behind. It is free for you to listen to this program. It is not free for us to produce. And we do need your support.
We've been here an awful long time, folks. Don't let us fade into the nothingness.
No, we want to be here much longer. We still, as what was that, Robert Frost? We have miles, promises to keep and miles to go before we sleep. So you can only support us through the mail, through check or money order, and that address is TPC, P.O. Box 34336, Bartlett, Tennessee 38184. Again, that's TPC, P.O. Box 34336, Bartlett, Tennessee 38184. $5, $50, $100 or more, you get the DVD double feature featuring Sam Dixon and Kevin McDonald's high-definition remarks at the recent League of the South conference. I watched it. It is very good, and I think you'll enjoy it as well. Two of our favorite guests, obviously, and yours too. So do support us. If anything is postmarked before October the 1st, you'll qualify for that fundraising incentive. We hope you'll get it, and we hope that you find our work worthy enough for your financial considerations, prayerful considerations too, for a great team of guests tonight. Jason Kuna, Warren Baylog, Henrik Palmgren, for Keith Alexander, our entire staff and crew. I'm James Edwards. We'll see you next week. Please do support us. And Nick Griffin will be your next guest, first hour, next Saturday night, live from London. Good night, everybody.